WHM monitoring.
NH monitoring. For NH, Fort Wolf from Craggy Pinnacle, North Carolina. HT, just seeing if I could get back into the repeater from up here.
Something in the background, but other than that, you're making a good trip in the repeater. I'm on a portable with external antenna in Hartwell, Georgia.
And pretty good distance. I can see Mount Mitchell from where I'm standing.
That little bit of movement cleared up. You're making a full trip into the repeater now.
Bit of elevation will do for you. I think it's around 6,000 feet or so, right where I'm standing.
Good. Elevation line of sight.
Well, thanks a lot for the signal report. KO4NNH clear.
Jim clear. Standing by. Jim. N0TR. Tom, you, by the radio today?
Yeah, I just cracked my knee on this bar stool and you interrupted me filling my pill boxes. How you feel about that now? This is N0TR.
You needed a break. I just want to tell you, I went fishing this morning down at Anthony Shoals on the Broad River. Caught catfish, hybrids, and stripers.
Where was that at, Bill? Anthony Shoals, you called it?
The place I was telling you about where my brother goes to tell your friend about a while back. We went down, I caught three channel cats that weighed between 12 and 15 pounds apiece, and then several, you know, 1 or 2 pounders. And caught two little stripers, 3-5 pounds apiece, and one hybrid about 5 pounds.
Sounds like a lot of fun, Bill.
It was all on rod and reel, and we had a blast. We watched a guy on the bank catch a flathead that weighed probably 35, 40 pounds. They were definitely biting early this morning. We got there at daybreak, and I caught the last catfish about 10 o'clock this morning, and I caught it on the smallest striper we took and made him in the bait, and I put his head on the hook and threw it out, and I said, I'm going to fish big for big fish, and sure enough, caught one.
How big was that, the 15-pounder?
Pounds, maybe a little more. It was a blast. It was good just to get out with my brother and have that alone time out there on the river, but the catching those fish just made it that much more better.
A fish that size can really put up a fight, especially a catfish. Man, oh man. Makes my blood boil, Bill. I'll have to tell Tim about that. He's over there. I think they're over there sitting drinking a beer now with his neighbor Steve and out in the garage. He's been showering off and on up here for a little while.
A few little sprinkles here in Hartwell, nothing. Nothing to amount to anything, but just enough to sputter the windshield if you were driving.
Well, I didn't do anything exciting this morning. I can't tell if it's raining out there now or not, Bernice, is it? It's not raining. Oh, I went down and got the SD card out of the game camera. Placed another squirrel down there for the funny, the other day I had a bobcat, I had a possum, had a raccoon, and then all at once this hawk flies down and picks up that squirrel and flies off with it. And then there was deer. Got some really good pictures, Bill.
Running a little zoo down there, having a bobcat and all that.
And we had, I got a coyote pup in the last one, and then there was, probably three or four coyotes, and a couple of them I got, like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and so I got color pictures of them, and then there was two vultures. Let's see, what else was on there? How many foxes was there, Bernice? One? I think there was just one fox. And then a one-eyed coyote.
A lot of animals that could eat chickens.
They might find it hard to do that if they come up by the house. But I've never had a problem. That's about 100 yards out there. And then I keep that all clear. And they don't like light. And on the back of the chicken pen, there's a motion light. And so I've never had a problem with them. It was funny this morning, though, I looked out there, and I got this one stub of a tree where I had cut down, several years ago, and the termites have got it real bad. But my coax runs over the top of it and goes up to a super loop. And I got a couple of those Kellum grips there, and there was the prettiest hawk you ever seen. The same one that I caught in the game camera taking that squirrel. And he was just sitting there, and he was looking at the same squirrel as I was eyeballing, Bill. So I didn't take the squirrel, because he wasn't eating any coax at the time. And I wanted to see that hawk fly down and pick him off, but he didn't.
Before it's over, now that he knows he's there. Those hawks are good hunters. We watched a couple of ospreys hit the water, and actually one of them made it back with a fish, and the other one missed, but that was a sight to see this morning as well.
This is N0TR. Well, you know, I looked out there one morning, that's been several years ago, and all at once, I have these security lights, and they're dim, and then they go bright. And one of them's recording, and the other one just goes bright. And that one, it'll follow you as you walk around, and so it's pretty nice. But there's one on the back of the chicken pen that way, too, that is dim, and then it gets bright if something moves. And they're LEDs, so they don't take hardly any energy. And I went in to use the restroom about, I don't know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And there was the darndest biggest owl flew right by my window you ever did see. And it just happened to be that I looked out there at that time and the lights went bright and he just flew right past my face.
We're just going to start having Tom Zoo. All them kind of critters. That's something else there. Oh, wow. We heard two of them hooting early this morning right as the sun was coming up on the river. And we didn't see them, but we could hear them for sure.
I could send you the pictures of them. I kept a few of the pictures, Bill, if you had a email down there. I don't know if you're good on QRZ or have an email on there or not, or if you do not want to put it out over the air, I understand that too.
And it's pretty easy email. It's McGee, McGee, .William@gmail.com. And I'll send you back some of the pictures of the fish I caught this morning, and you can share with your friends, and maybe that'll entice him to go on down and catch some.
try to get him away from these cars. Boy, my knee hurts now. I smacked that thing against the hardwood bar stool. Those Amish guys make them good. Yeah, Bill, I'd love to do that, and I'll put my phone number on there for you when I send it to you, and then you'll have my email then. Now, is there any capital letters in that? Is it capital MC or just MCGEE?
Just MCGEE.William@gmail.com.
Here we go. I got her, Bill. I flunk hooked on phonics, but somehow I can scribble that down. Yeah, it's amazing. I had never seen a coyote pup in my life, I don't think, except on National Geographic or something. And this was just a little fella. And then to get to see the hawk, that's quite a treat. I love to see those things. They'll come up there and sit on that post and watch the chickens occasionally, but there's no way they can get them. So I don't bother. But he won't be getting that squirrel from where he was at this morning now. He might be able to fly down there in front of that game camera and get him after a while.
He might do it. And is it a red-tail hawk?
You know, I don't think so. I've seen a lot of those back in Kansas. And a bunch of pictures there just minutes ago. I had a picture of his back. He's brown and got a speckled white on him, and sort of looks like a falcon or something, but I'm sure he's not. But, I cherish the wildlife. I love to look at them. But the squirrels, when they start eating around the coaxial cable, they get a headache.
I can imagine the squirrels, when they get near your coax, they might get a little, what's the formula for lead? PE or something like that?
Yeah, PB. Well, I gotta brag. There was one down there, right where the target is down there. And I measured that with a 100-foot tape before. And that was yesterday, wasn't it, Bernice? Yeah. And that was 84 yards, Bill. And I got to tell you, that's like hitting a quarter out there at that range. And he had a taste of that PB.
That's 84 yards. That's good. I got a little Savage 17 HMR. And that's what I do my business with. I got a 22 long rifle, but the 17 HMR is just so much more accurate for me. And it's a tack driver for sure. And I can put three shots the size of a dime at 100 yards with it, with the scope.
Well, that's excellent, Bill. I got him with a... It's not old. It's a phenolic stock. It's camouflage. It's got a 3-9 on it, but it's not anything fancy. It's not an expensive scope by any means. And that's what I got him with. But that Remington 597 has a rotten trigger in it. That's the one I use for long range, and I don't generally bother them out there unless they're bothering coax. And then the other one is a Ruger 1022, and it's got a new trigger in it that I put in it, and oh, it's slick, but it's set up for close range. It's got a 4-12 on it, but hunting scopes are parallax free at 100 yards. Therefore, you're much more apt to miss that squirrel. And I used to hunt a lot of them, hundreds of them up in Kansas and Missouri. And if they're in close, you got to set that objective lens or you'll miss him. And it's like focusing, you know. And that one I got on there, I think it's a Bushnell Banner. It's not an expensive scope, but it's nice. I think it's 40 millimeter on the objective lens. But if you set that right and you zoom in on 12, it takes a little bit. But you can put one right through in the eye. I mean, it's a good little rifle. The only thing I've ever had trouble with those rotary clips, I don't like them. But the rifle shoots extremely accurate. It's a carbine. I wish I'd have got the other one. Didn't come out till about a month later with the longer barrel on. I don't know what they call them, a sporter or something. And so I missed out on that because the kids bought that for me up in Kansas for my birthday at Walmart. And it's a nice shooting little rifle.
It'll do the job, no doubt. And that just, what you just said, just proves you don't have to have the most expensive scope or rifle to be accurate. A lot of it's got to do with the shooter and trigger control, knowing how to pull that trigger without pulling. It sounds like you got that down.
I used to not use a scope, but I've always had to wear glasses up until the last few years. And I was really nearsighted, and I went out hunting over in Missouri one time with a guy I knew, and he let me shoot his little Ruger with a Tasco scope on it, and I mean, it was a cheapie. But this place was lousy with gray squirrels, and we didn't have gray squirrels over in Kansas, hardly any. And so mostly red squirrels, the fox squirrels. And that ruined me. After that, I always used a good scope on my high-powered rifles, which I don't have any anymore, but I had a Winchester Model 70 with a John and Ertl 15-power scope on it for coyotes. It had a Kanzar trigger, which was 2 ounces when you set it, and then it was glass-bedded. It worked good. I've never shot one of those 17s. That sounds good, but heck, you can't find ammunition for nothing out there now, Bill.
I do. Yeah, you're right on the ammunition. It's scarce, that's for sure. And if you find it, it's not the cheapest anymore. But luckily I was I'm a hoarder when it comes to guns and ammo, so I've been in good shape through all this, and especially ammo. Used to, every time I'd go to Walmart, I'd buy a box of ammo of some caliber just to buy it. And I had and still have ammo for guns I don't even own, but I've got more than plenty for the ones I do.
Kind of in the same boat there, and I got a 1,000-pound safe bolted to the floor that I don't think anybody's going to bother. It's kind of like the sign says on the back door. It says, "Is there life after death? Trespass here and find out." I'm kind of close to those, but I give a lot of mine to the my son-in-law. He hunts deer and elk and stuff like that, and I give him my Model 27 357 up there in Michigan, and he shot a deer with it with a cast bullet. I had a mold that was very odd. It was a 215 grain semi-wad cutter gas check that Lyman made, and they, as far as I know, they don't even make it anymore. And I worked up a load with SR-4756. It was a little over 1,000 foot a second with that big bullet in it, and still maintained correct pressures. And he shot a nice deer with it.
Looks like it did the job. And Lord knows if if it'll do that to a deer or what it would do for any trespasser.
Oh, he lives up there in the Detroit area. But his mom lives on a farm in Wisconsin. And so he hunts deer there, and he hunts deer in Michigan. And then if he draws an elk tag, he goes up and hunts elk. And he just uses an old 30-06, and he's gotten, I think, 3 or 4 elk, and done real well, Bill. I don't think there's any weapon in the world beats a 30-06.
There, 30-06 has been the caliber, or that right at that caliber bullet ever since the M1 carbine come out for the military, and today's sporting rifles with it are as accurate and as deadly as about any you'll get. And you can pick up a nice one for, you know, a few $100s, or you can get a very nice one for, you know, more money. And they both will shoot good and take down a good size target. I always hunted with a 7.42 Woodsmaster 30-06 when I was growing up, and I loved it. That was a great shooting gun. I still got it. It's gotten some pitting on the bolt now, but it's still shootable.
Isn't that the semi-automatic one, Bill?
It's a clip, holds 5 rounds, and it's semi-automatic.
My neighbor bought one of those last year from a fool that sold it to him for a foolish price. That thing looks like it's never been shot, and he says he's going to keep that one. But he's the luckiest guy in the world. At the plant he works at, the guys know he likes guns, and that's who they go to. And a lot of these kids will get them, and then they get to needing money or something, and they'll go by and sell it to him. And boy, it's a beautiful thing. It has nice scope on it. But the last couple of years he hadn't even hunted. And we got deer stands down here behind the house, but in fact, he shot one in my backyard one time. But he just doesn't go that much anymore. For my grandkids, I got them a golden boy and a silver boy in .22s with the hex barrel, you know. And his son-in-law was over there, and he saw that one day before I gave it to the kids, and he went out and he bought a 357 Magnum in a carbine, you know, from Golden Boy. He said, boy, Tim told me, he says, when he seen that, he had to have one, Tom. And I would think that's a pretty useless caliber in a carbine, but I borrowed it from him the other day to do a little testing on on a round. I was loading some 2400 in a 357 case, and I never have used that before in him. It's kind of slow burning, but he come out at 20-inch barrel, 1641 foot a second, so I think that's with 158 grain bullets. So I give him a box of 25 and give him a nice new cleaning rag from Hoppy's, and for letting me use it, and he was pretty tickled. Hal says, my son-in-law, he says, I asked him the other day on the phone, and I said, what are those going for, Hal? And he said, $1 a piece. He said, primers up here, like 20 cents a piece, and you can't even find them. And I looked at Midway, and bullets for them were like 40 cents a piece.
Round is a good base price for just about any ammo these days. And I've got a single action 45 long Colt, and I think it's 255 grain. I'd have to look and be sure, but I got it for 64 cent a round, and that was because the gun store I shop at so much, and they give me a little deal on it, but they had it priced at 75 cent a round for the box.
What ridiculous, isn't it? Well, I used to have a Thompson contender with a 10.5 inch barrel and 45 long Colt. It's like anything else. When you're poor, you need something new. You got to sell it, and I did, and I could kick myself. But I had a 300 grain semi-wad cutter gas jet bullet that I had the mold for. And, of course, I let that go, too. But, oh, that was a good shooter, that 45 long Colt. And in the contender bill, you can get a lot more velocity and foot-pounds of knockdown power because it's a closed breech on it, not a revolver. And so you could get a lot more performance out of it. And I bought that mold from a company that made that 454 Casull. And that's what it was for, but the 454 worked just fine in the long Colt. And, oh my, that thing out to 100 yards was really good.
Those Thompson, I remember when they come out, or when I remember them coming out, they were a lot of dream guns for a lot of people. And, but yeah, I like the single action 45 long Colt. That one's more of a toy for me. I bought the cowboy holster and, you know, the whole 9 yards. And it's more of a, just a toy than anything. It's one of those I've always wanted and finally bought me one, and I'll carry it to the range every now and then and shoot it. But it's just a fun gun to shoot.
My son-in-law, Hal, he had a bunch of brass, a friend of his. Now, this was before COVID, shall we say. And he didn't reload, so he just gave them to Hal. And last time they flew down, he brought them to me. And so when we go back up there one of these days, I'll return the favor only with loaded ones. But that revolver probably is real comfortable at about, 850 foot per second.
Anywhere in that 850, 900, it's right on, and it depends on the bullet, but I buy just the primarily the cowboy loads, and that's what I was buying when you could get them, and then I do have some hollow points, some defense rounds that I keep in the house. I keep everything in the house loaded for the off chance I have to use it, so I wouldn't want to get hit with it.
So that spoiled your day. Well, I used to love to hunt rabbits and squirrels with a Colt Officer's Model Match in 38 Special, and I had an RCBS mold, and I'd cast 95 grain bullets, which you can't buy that in a regular 38 special load anywhere, and I'd hard cast them at about 13 Brunel hardness, and all those things would just punch a hole in a squirrel or a rabbit real good, and I'd run 5 grains of unique in them, so they'd run about 850 foot a second, and that was a good shooter. And then in the Gold Cup, I'd run 200 grain semi-wad cutters at about 850, 900, with 6 grains of unique, and they worked real good. But you couldn't shoot squirrels and rabbits with that. It'd probably dress them.
Yes, and it would probably put a hole in them and take all the hide with them. Like you said, it'd dress them for you.
time, my wife's sister wanted me to teach her son how to hunt up at Bernice's mom's farm. And they had tons of briars down in this one pasture. And you'd have to stomp them rabbits out, and especially in the snow. So I took Mike down there, and he's never lived this down, but he had a 20-gauge Savage single shot. And we was going through the... I had spats on the front of mine, and Bernice would make them for me. And put Nogahide on the front of my hunting pants, because it just turned them to pieces. And anyways, we got down there, and I heard, boom! And old Mikey shot. And I went over there to him, and I said, Mike, I said, what'd you shoot? It took me a little while to get to him because of the briars, of course. And he said, well, I shot that. Huh? But he said, I can't find it. And I looked down there, and he'd shot a rabbit at about 10 feet with that 20-gauge bill. I'm telling you, there just wasn't nothing left.
I bet the, it kind of disappeared in front of his eyes, no doubt, at 10 feet. That's pretty ambitious for the 20-gauge. He must have been fighting. I bet he doesn't live that down.
No, he's a medical scientist now up in Boston. High roller, you know. You never know it, though. He's still a farm boy. He's going to go back there for a week or two this month and just stay out there on the farm. And I envy him because it's got a beautiful stock pond about 50 yards behind the house. And I put up a big metal halide light out there for George, and it's got a sump pump out there where you can pump water, and it's got a dock, and they still got a couple of John boats and a paddle boat out there, I think. But you can go out there and fish at night, and there's channel cat out there that are, I'd say they easily exceeded 20 pounds now, because Brendan got one out of there, and he had a mount of it made, which you don't usually mount catfish, but he did. And it was 18 pounds. And George and I put channel cat and bass and perch in there. In the some kind of bullhead minnows or something. And anyways, that pond is 30 feet deep, Bill.
A deep pond. And, 30 feet deep. Down there in Anthony Shoals, most of the river where we get up into is only 6 to 8 feet, and we know where the holes are at that drop off to about 15 feet, and that's where we catch those catfish, is in them big holes in that deep water. But yeah, I would imagine there's, if them channel cats have been in that pond for any length of time, they've probably got huge.
Yeah, they are now, because they've been in there for at least 20 years. George and I put them in there. He passed away about 10 years ago, I guess. But we went out there one day, Bill, and we was in one of those two-man boats, you know, and it has a troller on it. And George and I was fishing, and I tied into what I thought would be the Kansas record bass. And so I got a hold of him, and I only had, it was either 6, 8, or 10 pound line. It was on an ultra light reel. And we was out in the middle of the pond, and I was fishing with a plastic worm up towards the bank. And so I started timing it because I couldn't bring it in. Every time I bring it in, I just get a little glimpse of its tail, and it pulled us all over that pond. You'll never guess what it was. And those white carp to keep the moss down, the grass carps, and that grass carp weighed a little over 19 pounds, Bill, by the time I got up to the boat.
I bet that if you were on a little ultralight rig with that line, you had a fight on your hands. I bet he did pull you around. We're using almost, I think it's 20 or 30 pound test line on our rigs we're using. And he, brother had one he hooked last week that just took off and took every bit of line, snapped it, and gone. So he's fixing up one now with a bigger reel and 50 pound test. He says he's going to go back and find that one that got away.
Good luck with that one. Yeah, I was amazed, and George is, you're the only one, Ralph, could do something like catch a carp in my in my boat. Shoot. But, you know, I fought him for 28 minutes, I think, but I'd hooked him before that. And so when we got up to the dock, I lifted him up out of the water real quick and had Bernice take a picture of it. And I put him right back in the water and held him and made the water go through his gills and turned him loose. And what really made me sad was George didn't tell me for quite a while. And he says the next day it was floating on top of the water and dead. Of course, the raccoons get it, but that just made me sick. I hated to lose a good fish like that, but they're supposed to only eat grass, but they'll bite a plastic worm now and then.
All the ones we caught today, well, except for the one little small striper that we turned into cut bait, we put all those catfish and the other striper and hybrid back, and like I said, I sort of, bass, I hold them by the tail, and like I said, sort of run them back and forth in the water, and they took off, and catfish, they didn't care. They just were happy to be back in the water and were gone, because we kept them out long enough to take a picture and put them right back in. We don't keep the big ones. If we're going out to, if we're going to fish fry, we'll keep them, but if we're just out fishing like this, we always put them back as long as they're not hurt or healthy.
Thing to do, Bill. Catch and release. Messenger OTR. Well, I seen a thing yesterday, and I can't remember the name of it. It was on one of the Discovery or National Geographic. And Bernice and I were sitting there watching it, about half asleep, and it was in Spain. And they had these catfish, and I can't remember the name of the catfish. It looked like a big flathead in a way. And they're an invasive species. And this river that this guy introduced them into, they're just taking it over. But I swear that fish had to be, one of them they got up by shocking it, and then they release it. And I think that thing was over 6 feet long, Bill. And I forget what he said that weighed, 154 pounds or some ungodly amount. But it showed him eating other fish, like bass and different things. So a lot of people were very unhappy that he introduced those into that river. But a lot of people like to catch them and eat them, too.
If it gets big enough, it'll eat something. I mean, the head off of that striper was probably big as the palm of your hand, and that channel cat I caught this morning on it, he chomped on it. We're using those circle hooks, and it hooks them perfectly in the corner of the mouth. And you don't have to set the hook or anything. You just sort of lift the rod and start reeling it once they grab it. And but I got that rascal in the boat, and I reached down and I was getting the hook out, so I had my thumb in my mouth, and that rascal flipped around and went down my thumb, and it took half the hide off of it. They got a mean bite when they get that size.
scratchy that time, Bill, but I could copy you. And you're right about that. I saw an old man out on the Neosho River one time when I was a kid. He walked out into the riffle below the 4th Street Dam there over by Parsons. And he had a nice channel cat on there, I don't know, probably 10 pounds or so. And he stuck his hand down in his mouth, and he stumbled. And the guys had to jump in the water and go out and get him, because every time he tried to get up, and of course he was an elderly fella, that catfish would flop around, and it took all the hide off his fingers. And they had to drag him out, catfish and all. And by the way, those work really good.
Big catfish, there was that same place down at Anthony Shoals. There was a guy, he had caught one on a bank line, and it was probably 35-40 pounds, and he got his whole hand up in the fish's mouth, and we were down there. It took every bit of hide off him. He was bleeding, and I mean, he had a mess. We knew the fella, and he ended up having to go to the doctor. It got infected. Catfish, dirty mouth, I guess. But it looked like somebody took a sander to his arm.
Yeah, they do. And they got a slimy skin, too. There's a kind of a slime on them. It's just natural. George, he was a lieutenant on the Wichita Police Force, and I just loved him. He was like my brother ought to have been. And we was real close. But he used to tell me stories about, he was born in Blackwell, Oklahoma, and they'd go down there and they would noodle fish. Did you ever see him doing that?
I grew up doing that with my uncle and father in the same river down at Anthony Shoals. It was highly illegal, but we would get down there and stop the holes up, and I seem to be the one that always got to go underwater and reach in. I learned a lot about catfishing real young.
You got more guts than a packing house, Bill. There ain't no way I'm reaching back into a hole where there might be a snapping turtle or anything else. And man, they had some big ones on that river. But that's what George and them do. I saw a special one time on the History Channel or National Geographic, and it showed these four or five people were out noodling fish and reaching back in those holes and catching those 50-pound and bigger catfish. And, boy, that's where two fools met.
I think I got the bravo to do it anymore. Like I said, when I was young, I was a pistol, and I would do about anything, and that's what made me a good candidate for Army basic training. It didn't faze me a bit to do some of the crazy stuff they do to you in basic training, but noodling is a can be a scary skill, that's for sure.
Yeah, they used to catch them every once in a while when I was a kid. I'd hear about it. I've never done it or even tried it. But these guys would get the old telephone generators, and they'd go out there and they'd drop two different lines down, and the scale fish, it won't bother because they're kind of insulated from it. But the catfish would come floating to the top, and they'd grab them. And boy, there were some guys lost their automobiles and their boats and everything else for doing that.
Yeah, I've heard about it, heard stories of it, but I just, that's kind of like that joke Jerry Clower told. He was the only one catching fish one year, so the game warden went with him, and he got out there on the lake, and he reached in his bag, pulled out a stick of dynamite, lit it, threw it in the water, boom, all the fish rolled up. Game warden said, "What are you doing?" About that time, he lit another one, handed it to the game warden. He said, "You gonna talk or fish?"
that one well. Well, I'll tell you, they take that seriously now, I'm sure. But I never seen it done. But these guys over there in Spain yesterday on TV, they had a big long hot stick, and out on the end of it was a thing that looked like a dip net, sort of, but it wasn't. And they'd stick that on the water, and those suckers would come floating to the top. And I've heard of dynamiting them too in the old days, but I never did break a game law, and I'm not about to now. But there's various ways of doing that. We set limb lines and trot lines, and it was a lot of work. And I've seen Richard Garner and some of the Garner family use carp that were many times 2 pounds and sometimes bigger for bait for the big flatheads.
Like I say, you got to fish big to catch big, and you know, like I said, that little striper, I mean, it probably weighed 2.5 pounds, and so you can figure the head size on it behind the gills on the hook. And that catfish took it this morning, and because we were having trouble with turtles stealing the bait. We were doing cut shad, and your pole would jiggle about twice, and the bait would be gone. So I decided to put something on there big enough so they couldn't pull off, and got that last big cat this morning.
Them turtles were awful bad about that. We'd use beef milk, skin it on one side, and that made a good catfish bait, but it made a good turtle bait too. And if we caught a turtle, we just either cut their throat or shoot them when you brought them up, you know. But they were a pain in the rear when you were trying to fish for catfish. Well, Bill, I better let you go and get back over here to filling my pill box. And it's been great talking to you and reminiscing, and I'll get those pictures down to you later today sometime. I got to go out back and check on the girls here, see if they laid any eggs. And I don't know if we're going to get any more rain or not. That was just a pop-up storm. We got 1700s showing 78 degrees. 77% humidity, and it feels like 80, it says on my weather station. You take care, Bill. We'll catch you down the line. This is N0TR. Clear with your final.
You and Bernice have a great evening, and enjoy talking with you. And shoot me that email, and I'll send you back some pictures of my own. And it's, I don't know what the other weather is, but it's 85 degrees in the shade here in Hartwell right now, so I'm fixing to go back in and get the air conditioning. 73 is Tom, M4WHM, I'm clear.
N4WHM, KO4NUE, you got a minute, Bill?
Chad, how you?
I'm pretty good, bud. Pretty good. I know it's hot and you want to get into the air conditioner, but I was wondering if you could help me locate something. I am in need of a server rack or a server cabinet to support my local amateur radio club. And I need to know where I can get something like that. Obviously, I don't want to buy new. But any ideas? I've checked eBay and Craigslist, and not a whole lot of luck.
eBay was going to be my first suggestion. Those are... other than maybe checking with a local computer place, they might have an old server you could, dump the guts out and use the rack. But Yeah, that's not an easy to find item.
Well, I got my hands on the racks, the racks and the corner posts, but we're just trying to find a way to keep the mice from getting into the components, and I'm just wondering if you had any ideas or something. But sounds like we're about on the same page.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, you know, at work I've got tons of them, but they're state property, so I can't turn loose of them. But that's why I say if you find a, just, you know, look for a local computer company and just call them and ask them if they got a, you know, old server box and, you know, rack mountable, or even look for a rack mountable UPS box, and you could use that. And then, you know, like I said, you don't want to buy new, but they make, you know, boxed enclosures for racks. I'm trying to think of the name of them, but it slips me right now. If I think of it, I'll let you know. But and they're not all that expensive, under $100. But yeah. Local computer store would be my best suggestion.
KI4LZF4.
This is KO4NUE and Bill out of Hartwell.
K908 Billy, who lives in Anderson and ultimately worked for over here at Clemson University. He might be able to get hold of you of some of that. I can't say it for sure, but it is a possibility, because that's kind of what he does for them over there, IT work. And you might check with Billy Tate. Oh, boy, now I'm having trouble with his call. K908, you asked the 47 machine.
I got you, Andy. I'll see if I can run him down, or I'll send him a message on QRZ. Kilo Niner Oscar Hotel, K908. Is that right?
That's it. K908. He frequently comes to our group meetings out here at the Pigeon ZOC. He has for, I guess, a good long while now, and he works in that kind of thing, and I'm sure he sees some old ones and all, so if you can't find any from anywhere else, you might want to check with him, and go to the station, go ahead.
That's a good idea there. Like I said, if he can get them from the university, I work at Georgia, the University of Georgia in IT, and like I said, we got them, but we have to send ours to state surplus, and then they sell them off by the pallet. So they might be one laying around over there he can get his hands on.
I don't know if he can get one from him, but it is a possibility. He might be able to, and you do a check around here, you'll find Billy into a lot of things when he ain't working. He's the state EC for the state here, too. State Emergency Coordinator.
This is KO4NUE, and I'm clear. Y'all have a wonderful day. 7-3 to both of you. Thanks for the help. Well.
Jerry, KI4LZF4.
Just want to tell Chad he might find Billy on the 145-47. I don't remember the tone on that repeater, but that's Billy's repeater.
Say again, last three.
Yeah, 470, 145-470. It's located up on Caesar's Head, but it's got a tone on it, but I don't remember the tone.